First, as a complete mea culpa, I'm very sad. I think of myself as like a deep in the kernel C network hacker. I just did war with PowerPoint and won, and so I'm a little bit sad about that. So help me work through this. So later, definitely. Maybe even one is not sufficient. So I am here to talk to you guys about this thing that I will call SDN, software-defined networking. Out of a show of hands, how many people think of themselves as network engineers in the audience? So we'll call that roughly about a third. How many people just want the network to work and don't really care about how? All right. So this talk is going to be an experiment because a lot of this gets to the network. For people who raised their hand the first time or network engineers, they know that the network is just a horrible, horrible pain in the ass. And for the rest of you who raised your hand the second time, you don't know, don't care, and generally get annoyed at the networking people when they're slow to deploy a new VLAN for you. And so for the first audience, you know, this is a way to make the network better. And for the second part of the audience, you know, hopefully you find it interesting from an academic standpoint, but trust me, at the end of the day, you know, this will actually help people, help the other side of the audience, you know, deploy networks and make your life easier. Because the reality is for a lot of people, the network is actually in the way for doing the top to bottom thing that your company does. And so let's see what we can do about this. So I'm going to walk people through what I think the problem is, and the problem is that networks are closed and they resist automation. And I just to try to speak the language of the community here, this is actually the same problem that the DevOps groups have come about to try and solve for the server world about 10 years ago. You know, they realized that they needed better automation out of the server world and wanted to have more programmability and more flexibility and really more automation for how to manage servers. And so I think of SDN as really DevOps for networking. And so what I'm going to talk about is I'm going to talk about this protocol called OpenFlow, and I'm going to show you how you can manage and program your network with OpenFlow. I'm going to talk about something that's ostensibly different and completely orthogonal but very, very complementary, which is trying to run your networking devices like servers. That is, you know, how you deploy them, how you manage them, how you operate them. And last, you know, the value of having an open operating system. And I'm going to show you how you can effectively dual boot the operating systems on devices just to make your life interesting. And if any of this has any traction with you guys, I'll end this out with a bunch of open source projects and pointers where you can get your feet wet, potentially with your own networking gear or at least a virtual environment on your laptop. So with that in mind, you know, just quickly, who am I? Why am I up here in front of you guys? I am the CTO at a startup called Big Switch Networks that's helping trying to pioneer this. I'm also chair of the Open Networking Foundation's Architecture Working Group. Anyone heard of the Open Networking Foundation? Oh, okay, so that's surprising. You know, it's you know, the standards organization that's trying to standardize some of this stuff. Previously, I worked at Stanford from the Clean Slate Lab, where a lot of the software-defined networking stuff came from. And before that, I was a distributed systems researcher at University of Maryland. You know, go Terps. I saw some Terps here. I even see Andrew there. Hi, Andrew. Sorry. My old boss apparently is here. And I was a campus network admin and jack of all trades, so there was a point where attending LISA was a reasonable thing for me to be doing. So what is the problem? And so, you know, when I was first given access to a router or a switch, you know, back in 1996, I typed commands that looked a lot like this. And, you know, you add routes and you log in devices and you type enable and you hopefully you type the right command. And, you know, if we fast forward to today, the exact same thing applies, right? And, you know, it's not fair to say that, you know, networking hasn't really changed. You know, a lot has changed on the data path, like in terms of like the raw speeds, things go much, much faster. And, you know, the corresponding memories that are required to do that, we have really gone through huge advances. But in terms of how you manage them, in terms of the control plane of them, very little has changed. And, you know, I give this talk and I give this slide a lot and people are like, that's crap, you know, everything's changed, lots has changed. You know, it's absolutely true, something has changed. You know, I used to telnet to this box and now I SSH to it. It's a cheap laugh and I apologize, but you know, so again, you know, back in 1996, what we were doing with servers, right? You know, I would run around with a little wallet of CDs and I'd install them and, you know, maybe I'd plug in some serial cables if I wanted another out-of-band management point, but, you know, our servers looked like towers and that was kind of annoying because they were always dying on us.
Yep.
Fast forward to today, I mean, we have data centers, we have Chef, we have Puppet, we have all sorts of technologies to make these things run faster, to make it easier to manage. It's not just that the CPUs here are getting faster, it's just the way that we manage and deploy these things are much easier. We don't have that in the networking world. You know, you people managing your servers are in a much happier place than the networking folks are. And so why is that? So if you look at the, and apologies to the audio folks, so I keep walking away from the mic, I'll stay here. If you look at how these devices work, you know, raise your hand if you have one of these devices in your network. It works a lot like mainframes did back in the 70s, which is to say, a company, and you know, it's not just one company, there are many of them, they build the switching chip on the low end, they build the box, like the actual hardware specification, you know, the metal and the traces and everything. They build the operating system. And they also, in that operating system, there are actually applications that run, you know, be it OSPF or BGP or something like that. And there's this whole vertically integrated solution. It's completely locked, it's completely tied down. If you wanted to deploy Chef or Puppet on this box, you know, that's probably not going to happen. If you wanted to write a new operating system, you don't have the hardware specs available to you. You know, if you wanted to work up and down this stack, you are limited to the knobs that are exposed to you off the top of this stack. It's completely different from in the server world. And so that's the problem. So I'm going to throw out SDN as the solution. And you guys will have to bear with me. I'm actually going to go the technical route first, which is to tell you the low level of what comes out of SDN, and then I'll come back to how we actually can use this to solve the problem. It's a technical crowd, and hopefully you guys will enjoy going with me on that. So, a couple more caveats. I get quite often, you know, can I buy an SDN? And, you know, the answer is no. You know, much like DevOps, SDN is not a product. It's, you know, you could argue it's an architecture, but I think maybe more important for a lot of the people here, it's eventually, when it's done right, when the future of SDN has really been realized, it'll actually be an implementation detail that will make your network run better, but you know, for a lot of people, you don't have to necessarily know about. Think of it almost like the shift from more traditional programming to object-oriented programming. You don't care how the program was written, you just care that it works better. And so for a good chunk of you, that might be what you take from this, which is your network will work better, and you know, maybe you'll know some of the details, but it's not really relevant for you. For the rest of you who are interested in more of a, you know, people who tinker at home or are interested in applications that are enabled by SDN, this might actually be a very interesting talk, and I'm hoping that's the case. So the fundamental problem in my mind is we deploy applications on our network, and they have requirements of the network, but we don't really have a good way of expressing them to say, you know, this is what an application needs, or we don't have a way of saying, you know, I actually can't support that application on your network. So think about it. If you have a backup service that you want to deploy, you want that backup service to have sufficient bandwidth. You need to go across routers, maybe across a firewall. Somebody who deploys that service, you know, has an idea in their head, an approximate idea, ideally you're fairly correct, of what those requirements are. And they take that and they'll go to a network admin, you know, assume for a second these are different people, and say, you know, and this is by email or a trouble ticket or maybe a hallway conversation, I want to deploy a backup service. Can the network do this? And you know, quite often this conversation doesn't happen at all, right? You know, you're just like, you deploy a service and you get upset that it doesn't run. But for the network person, you know, assuming they have this conversation, you know, they have to go through a whole bunch of mental math of, do I have enough support, enough ports for this? Do I have enough devices? What configs do I have to rewrite? Which boxes do I have to touch? What downtimes do I have to schedule? There's a whole lot of mental math that goes on to understanding, can I support this application? And if you're really good at your job as a network admin, you know, in the background, you've been collecting a whole multitude of statistics trying to track the health of your network. How many people have time to actually do that, you know, in a way that you feel comfortable and know what your network is doing? Show of hands. None. Right? Most people don't have the time to be proactively probing your network to say, how close to the breaking point are you? And a lot of that is because the network is just closed and it's hard to get these knobs, but also, you actually administering your network box by box. There's not holistic solutions. And you know, there are companies that will try to sell them. If you buy all from this company, you could try to get this, except for this product line that they got from an acquisition. Well, that one doesn't count, and things like that. And you know, this is a hard problem to solve. And it gets worse, right? Because say the network admin can, so the network admin has to come back with this question of like, yes, I can support this app, definitely, or no, I can't. But more likely he comes back with an answer that says, well, I think I can, but you'll come back in about 6 months and I'll definitely know then. And what that lag time means is that your organization has just suffered an agility hit, which is to say, you know, there's an application you wanted to deploy at time T, and you can't deploy it until T plus 6 months because the network admin doesn't know if the network will support this, and he can't afford to risk the existing applications, or he doesn't have the time. And that's a big problem for people. And you know, say he does support this application, he has to turn around and schedule downtime for all these boxes, log into each one individually, type configs. Ideally, this person is a master of all of these things. In practice, you know, there'll probably a couple people on a team, and they have to work out who's going to do what and what timing. And you know, there's synchronized. And, you know, massive downtime is something we all want to avoid, you know, even scheduled. And it gets more interesting as you support more applications and more applications. And you know, as you start to scale up the size of your team, you know, this coordination of who's doing what updates when, that gets to be really hard. This is all a big mess. And so what I'd like to propose is an architecture where we have what I call an SDN-enabled application. That is an application that can talk directly to the network. And you know, give me a second, I'll explain what I mean by the network. And say, these are the requirements I have. I'm a backup application. I want to back up 4 terabytes of data each night. Tell me when is a good time to do that. Schedule me. Tell me what's going on in the network. Tell me, you know, now is not a good time to do this. You know, a link that's really important to my application is down. Or tell me, you know, actually, you know, I know you said that you want to do it at 4 a.m, but you know, it's midnight now and no one's doing anything. Do you want to proactively schedule this? You know, there's a bunch of things that you can do when you have a conversation with the network as an application that make this easier, to make the world easier. Now, if you're going to talk to the network, there has to be a thing there to talk to. And I will call that thing an SDN controller. And so its job is to provide an aggregate view of all the boxes in the network in terms of link state, in terms of topology, in terms of stats, up to an application. You know, some summarized view that the application may or may not choose to do anything with. Think of it like a set of hints. And its job is also to take the sum of all the requirements from the applications down to it and use that to change that into lower level device configurations. And so think of this as a scheduler in an operating system. You have a whole bunch of processes that run. They all have requirements in terms of memory, disk space, CPU, things like that. And the operating system does scheduling of them. It's exactly the same thing for the network with an SDN controller. And then the last part of this is, we'll skip the fact that there's an admin who tweaks these things, but the last part of this is you need a low-level configuration language to talk to each of these devices, to actually enforce this. Think of, you know, if this were an operating system, you need the equivalent of SCSI to talk to the disks. Right, and you know, not everything's a disk, so you'll need a collection of protocols to talk to the collection of devices. But you want the same properties that you intuitively get out of something like SCSI, which is to say, it's very low level. Not many people want to work at this level, but you can really control the whole device, and you can interrogate the device, you can ask for capabilities, there's capabilities negotiations, there's statistics, there's fault detection, there's all the properties that you want to pull up the control of the device to a logically centralized intelligence. And so the claim is here that, you know, as networks get bigger, as there more applications show up, as you have more requirements on your network, you know, PCI compliance, HIPAA compliance, any sort of security compliance that you have to do, the mental math for a network admin gets to be too much for what I call mere mortals. Now, a lot of network admins really push the threshold of what mere mortals can do, and you know, hats off to you guys. But you know, for the rest of us, this is a scheduling problem. We really should get a computer to help us out with this. And that's kind of the essence of what SDN is. And so for the rest of the talk, I'm going to be talking about some of these underlying protocols, some of the applications for why people might want to do this, and you know, some of the ways that you could get the hardware into your own network. Oh, and one thing just to throw out now, because every time I give this talk, people are like, single point of failure, what do you do? And you know, the answer is, this controller is not necessarily a single box. It is logically centralized, which means that either it could be a single box if you're a research and education network and you don't really care and this is just a test setup, or it could be an active standby node, or it could be some sort of cluster. So I'm actually not going to draw out this as multiple controller nodes. Just know that it is logically centralized and implemented by a whole bunch of things, that there is some sort of redundancy and load balancing. So what is this OpenFlow thing that I've mentioned? So if you look inside a router, you'll see something that, you know, I'll call either a supervisor module or a route engine, depending on the company, and a whole bunch of line cards. And so if you get a routing advertisement, you know, say BGP, that says, you know, here's a prefix. I'm telling you, if you want to get to this prefix, send it out this port. You know, this message actually shows up on one of the line cards, but then gets punted up to the routing engine to do some computation. You know, is this a good route? Is this a new route? Is this my preferred route? And if it is a route that you want to accept, what actually happens is state gets pushed down to the line cards themselves. And so when a packet shows up and says, hey, I want to get to somewhere in that prefix, that routing happens locally without going anywhere else. And so there's this state that gets pushed down that says, here's a route, and when you see this route, take this path. And you know, this is the same process for MPLS, if you've heard of that. It's the same process for OSPF and other routing protocols. It's the same process for spanning tree protocol. There's a whole bunch of state that follows the same form of, here's something in on a line card, I punt it up to the supervisor module to decide what to do with it, and then I change what happens in the line cards as a result. And so this is how networks work today. And I'm going to call this protocol closed flow. And so correspondingly, what OpenFlow is we'll abstract this route engine as an OpenFlow controller. We'll call these line cards OpenFlow switches. And we'll actually just standardize this protocol that I showed you guys, between them, and call that OpenFlow. So the critical kind of sleight of hand that I've pulled here is a lot of people vendors are actually fairly scared of OpenFlow. It, you know, it causes new things. You know, network admins are concerned about it. You know, what is this thing that's going on? I'm controlling my network from a Linux box. This is the same process that runs in your network already. So if people say OpenFlow can't do X, you know, that's almost inherently not true in possibility. I'll come back to where the details of the implementation are later. But you know, at least in an architectural perspective, anything that's possible with closed flow is possible with open flow. It's just a standardized version of what people are already doing internal to their boxes. So if we go one level of detail more into this, you know, what open flow looks like on a switch is it's a firmware update. So we've got an OpenFlow controller, it's some process, user space process, that's running on a server, you know, probably Linux, because that's what most of us run. It communicates over a dedicated management network. It can speak SSL if you're worried about encryption, if you're worried about physical problems on your management network. And it talks to a piece, an agent on your firmware called an OpenFlow agent. And it expresses an abstraction that I'm going to call a flow table. And so a flow table looks like almost like an ordered list of wildcards. It's a bunch of rules for how I forward packets. So the highest priority rule here is if the header matches the IP protocol 6, which is TCP, and the TCP destination is SSH, then what I want you to do is perform the action on it, decrement the TTL, and forward it out port number 3. This is the abstraction that OpenFlow exposes. And you know, maybe a lower priority rule is if the destination is in 128/8, then I want you to put it on quality of service queue number 4. Now, I haven't defined what that is here. That can be defined in other parts of the protocol, but you know, this is the action that I want you to perform. And so the idea is a flow table is a match action structure. So it's a list of wildcards to match on header fields and a list of things to do if it matches on. And so I've heard maybe a detail that people might hear. I've heard from a lot of people that you know, the existing chips are not very flexible, that the tables are too small. That's really just not true because our existing chips actually work for our existing networks. It's just a matter of trying to figure out how to leverage them. And you know, for someone like myself, there are tables that are very large in terms of they have 100,000 entries, but you can match on few fields. And there are tables that are very flexible, in which case you can match on lots of fields, but they're very shallow. There might be only 1,000 entries. And so FUD that you might hear about technologies like this is, you know, well, I can only match on all the fields in a very small table, and so I can't run my network on a very small table. And you know, that's just really not an issue, because we're talking about the same hardware that CloseFlow runs on, and your networks do run, ergo we can make this work. It's just a matter of you know, working the mental math to make this work. And the other thing to note here is the letter of the OpenFlow spec is absolutely not at feature parity with what I call closed flow. But you know, that's not an architectural limitation, it's just a reality of where the specification is, and it's something that can and continues to evolve over time. The interesting thing about this is when you have multiple line cards pointing at one controller, your network becomes easier to manage. How many people use Cisco VTP in their networks? All right. So basically, different companies have vendor-specific versions of, here's a configuration, don't make me type it on every node in my box. You know, just kind of push it out logically. But A, they end up typically limited to certain product lines, and B, they're certainly limited to certain vendors. So specific vendors. And so what's nice about OpenFlow is that it's actually vendor agnostic at some level. And you know, again, to beat home the point, you know, people see these slides and they think single point of failure. And it's absolutely not a single point of failure. You know, you can actually have a protocol between controllers and run them in some sort of federated way, you know, so to do some sort of load balancing. And the protocol also supports failover. So if one controller dies, the switches fail over to another controller. And so you really can manage your network very much like you manage the closed flow networks that you have today. There's also some confusion about SDN versus OpenFlow. You know, the clearest statement that I can make is SDN is to OpenFlow like the web is to HTTP, which is to say OpenFlow and HTTP are protocols. You know, the web is kind of this large amorphous thing that continues to evolve, and SDN's a little bit like that as well. But you know, an SDN controller will typically speak many protocols, so there'll be many types of devices to run in the network. And OpenFlow is a really useful and interesting one, but it's not really necessary or sufficient. You know, there are protocols like OVSDB and OFConfig, if you've heard of those. You may have heard of SNMP. There's a long list of things that a controller can speak to manage the network. And it's really the collection of these things that you might need to run a large network. And any of the exact details depend on the implementation. So, apologies, I've got a repeated slide here. How many people have heard of OpenStack? All right, better collection, good job. There are SDN-enabled versions of OpenStack. So if you grab a new version of Neutron, which is the OpenStack networking plugin, you can actually get it to describe its requirements. Oh, my slide is dated, it still says Quantum. Quantum's the old name for Neutron. You know, it can say, I have two VMs, A and B, and they're allowed to talk to each other, and I have two VMs, X and Y, and they're allowed to talk to each other. But no other combination is allowed to talk to each other. You know, that is, you know, my requirement as an application. And you tell that to the network, that is the controller, and the controller will actually turn around and enforce that as various rules in the network. More interestingly, there are actually a growing collection of blueprints for taking into account link utilization and other network load when you place VMs. So it's to say, you know, I have a VM, I'd like to put it somewhere, but tell me some place that in addition to it has enough memory, it has enough CPU, it also has enough bandwidth on the network. You know, this is something that the controller can provide to it to say, you know, this is actually a good spot in the network that's relatively calm. And so this is the requirements going down and an abstracted view of the load going up. And then given those requirements, it can turn those around into corresponding OpenFlow and or OVSDB commands to send down to the server and say, this is how I want you to enforce this policy. You know, maybe this is allocating a VLAN, maybe this is inserting ACLs into the network, maybe this is bringing up a tunnel, maybe this is opening up a hole in the firewall for something. You know, the idea is we're decoupling the policy from the implementation. So I am going to jump to some of the more fun parts of the talk. I'm talking a little bit slower than I thought. So everybody saw this picture before. The network is actually fairly homogeneous and vertically integrated. Think of how our servers work, right? So for our servers, we actually have a choice of chip vendors. We have a choice of box vendors. We have a lot of choices of operating system vendors. And we have more applications we can put on top than we can shake a stick at. Why don't we have that for the network? The answer is, actually, we're starting to do that. So if you want to call this a bare metal server, which is to say you can buy the software separate from the hardware, what's interesting is there's an ecosystem evolving that's letting us do that for networking devices. So let's call this thing a bare metal switch. There's a growing collection of companies, Broadcom, Marvell, Syntec, Intel, you know, I can make a long list, that will make just the chip. And they kind of don't care what you do with it. And then there's a growing collection of people who will make just the box, you know, just the ports, just the sheet metal. And they kind of don't care what software you put on it. And then there's a growing collection of companies who will put software on that box, my company included, you know, caveats abound. And then there are different applications you could put on top of that, where OpenFlow is only one. You could run traditional protocols as well. And so this ecosystem, this, you know, running your network devices like a server, is actually becoming a very real thing. And certainly large companies like Google and Facebook have jumped on this, you know, Amazon as well, and it's becoming more and more popular. And so I'm going to skip this. There is a box from a company called Quanta, and I don't have much affiliation with Quanta, so I can, you know, throw this out there. It is a 48 by 10 gig switch with four 40 gig uplinks. It's a data center 1U switch. Dual power supplies. You know, this is basically identical hardware-wise to a Cisco Nexus 3K or a Juniper QFX 3500. If you Google for Quanta LY2, you can get really cheap prices for it. And you know, there's two interesting things about that. One is that it's cheap. Okay, well, yeah, that's so what. You know, you might be able to get some of these big guys to discount the prices to that. But more interesting, you can Google for a price. I mean, how many network people have wanted to know how much a box really costs, right? And you know, I will tell you, these are actually the crappy prices. If you talk to the people and you get these anywhere in any sort of bulk, and also this includes software that you may or may not want, you can actually get significant discounts on top of this. And so, like I said, I'm not fronting for any of these companies, but you know, it's to be able to, you know, one-click shop and buy some devices for your network is a very, very different world than where network devices are, you know, really in our deployed networks today. Quick, very cool thing. One of the things that you need, that you kind of take for granted on the PC side, is a standardized boot process. So on your servers right now, there is, and you know, there isn't like a written down IETFS standard for this. Of, you know, when the thing boots up, you initialize the devices this way, and you grab the first 512 bytes of the disk vector, and you start loading. The process of doing that boot process, is something you take for granted. So ONI is the equivalent for switches. And so this is newly coming out, newly standardized. My company's involved with this, a bunch of other companies are involved with this. And the idea is to actually create a standard net boot process for your switches so that you can manage these things. It looks a lot like Pixie boot, but much like you do your servers. So you can have stateless boxes that you can dual boot different operating systems, so you could get something from Cumulus is a company that puts software on here. You can get something from Cumulus, and if you decide you don't like it, you can roll that out and put something from PK8, another company that puts software out. And if you don't like that, you can roll that out and put something, you know, for example, from my company. You know, to be able to put a new operating system on your device that didn't come from the people who built the hardware, it's a dramatically different world. Just to throw out another benefit of an open operating system, this is a color-coded graph of what shows up on at least our switch operating system. Everything that's blue is standard open source Linux. The bits that are orange are also open source from my company, and only the dark blue, which is third-party and closed source, and the purple are closed source, and that's just for NDA reasons. So there really are large open source operating systems coming about that you can put on your switch and download right now. I've talked to people about running Puppet and Chef directly on the switches. And that just opens up a very interesting world. Imagine being able to apt-get random processes onto your network devices. And I know I'm running out of time here, but if you guys find this interesting at all, there's a litany of open source tools that you can jump into with this. A great one that I recommend starting with is called Mininet. It uses Linux containers and namespaces and virtual switches that you can create an entire little network on your laptop or on your server. So it's no physical devices, it's all virtual switches, but it will let you play with OpenFlow and all of SDN without making any sort of hardware or even monetary investments. There's an OpenFlow Wireshark plugin if you're so inclined with that. There's some benchmarking tools. There's a litany of open source controllers. Open Daylight's one you may have heard of. It's been big news. Beacon is one that I've worked on, Floodlights from my company. The one thing I will say is with Floodlight, you'll get there's a one-stop shop VM where you get a VM that has Mininet and OBS, which is an open vSwitch, and the Wireshark plugin and a whole bunch of other things. So it's really meant for getting started. Perhaps more interesting for the network admins, there's a growing collection of hardware that's already in your network that you can get firmware that has OpenFlow on it. This is not at all a complete list. This is, to the best of my understanding, given talking to various customers, if you have networking gear that's on this list, talk to your vendors. They can give you a more accurate answer. But HP, Arista, Juniper, Cisco stuff is in beta. Brocade, IBM, Dell, even Extreme. A lot of them have OpenFlow implementations in various states that you'll have to talk with your vendors about. You can also get the bare metal switches that I mentioned. You can get those directly and put the software on them yourself. And last, there are a bunch of pure software switches, what I'd call a virtual switch, that you can deploy without even doing a hardware investment. And I really did have a conclusion slide. Okay, good. So I hope I've convinced you guys that the way networks are run really needs to change. They're closed and they resist automation. And it's really kind of networking really needs a DevOps. They need to solve that same problem that DevOps tried to solve for servers. And I showed you OpenFlow. It's a protocol for doing that at a very low level. I showed you these new devices that you can actually buy separate from the hardware, separate from the software, and I showed you a bunch of open operating system stuff. And ideally, I showed you a bunch of jumping off points in open source and OpenFlow hardware. If you're interested in this stuff, that you can actually grab and start using and playing with in your own labs. And I guess with that, I have a little bit of time for questions. So thank you very much. Before you ask your question, I have to apologize. You just saw a lot of these slides last week, didn't you?
And they were even better this time. you do an awesome job explaining this, and I agree with you on the DevOps for networking. The question I have is about the OpenFlow, and it's kind of a two-part question. One is, there doesn't seem to be a good way to abstract OpenFlow for generalists, right? It seems like the vendors kind of embed theirs, and I see there's Frenetic. And I think you were at the session where I asked the woman who's in charge of Frenetic, why are we kind of rewriting, why are we not using Chef and Puppet? I mean, what are your thoughts about generalists being able to, if you want the DevOps community to actually play this game where the ultimate goal possibly abstractions for flow tables, right? How do we get there from today to the future?
So let me rephrase the question slightly differently. This is why I like the idea that OpenFlow is a little bit like SCSI. How many people deploy SCSI-based things in their network? And how many people have a real understanding of what SCSI does and how it works? Right? And I think it's that same idea, right? Which is someone's going to have to develop stuff on top of OpenFlow really for it to be usable by generalists. And in terms of Chef and Puppet, I can imagine writing the the chef to OpenFlow translation bits, I think that's the wrong layer, much like chef to SCSI is the wrong layer. Now, there needs to be stuff on top of it. And so a free pop prop for my friend Jennifer Rexford with her Phronetic tools. People are trying to look at what are languages on top of this, you know, what are paradigms and ways of thinking about it on top of this that might be more manageable. But the to your question, you know, it's clear that OpenFlow isn't it. Other questions? If you want to grab the mic, we're being recorded for posterity.
What sort of analysis has been done by the implication of putting these much more complex environments into a more traditionally less complex environment? Like, you know, more bare metal tends to be, or could be, less complicated and therefore prone to less bugs than a full-blown operating system.
So it's interesting you mentioned that. If you talk to the folks at Google who are interested, who have been really pioneering some of this stuff, their main use case for looking at this is actually to remove features from the network. That they actually, you know, there's so much features that go in a standard networking stack that exactly to your point, their main interest is just removing the things that they don't need in a modular way. And so absolutely, that's for some people, that's a first-class interest in this.
Two questions. One, the OpenFlow controller, if the controller was down, would the network actually be impacted, or would you just be losing control of the switches for the period of time that the controller was down?
So there's nothing implied by the OpenFlow spec, but certainly a well-written OpenFlow, you know, session would be, you know, if the controller goes down, the network doesn't stop. It keeps going, but exactly as you say, it loses control.
I guess another way of putting it is the controller active or passive?
The controller pushes down rules. So when the controller goes away, the set of rules that exist stay there.
Right.
And that's actually configurable, but you know, the right way to do it is they stay there. And so the question is, how comprehensive are the rules that are in place?
Okay. The other question would be, and I don't know if this is a stupid question or if I'm missing something or what, so help me out. To what degree can OpenFlow and some of these things be used with existing, what we'll call legacy, networking equipment, in that I'm sure that on most of the switches and things that are available today, there could be a firmware update that would give it OpenFlow capability. But what about, has anyone looked at the ability to essentially take OpenFlow rules, translate those into configurations that could be pushed into switches in order to allow you to sort of have legacy control?
So there's, and in fact, if you know, for the list of hardware that I listed, almost everything will run in what I will call a hybrid mode, where it runs kind of the legacy protocols next to the OpenFlow protocols, and there has to be some sort of configuration that says when OpenFlow wins and when the legacy stuff wins. Absolutely, everybody's looking into that. The question is, to the earlier question about simplification, you know, is this what people want? And the answer is, in some cases, yes. And the answer is, in some cases, no. And so it comes down to the fact it's really hard to virtualize a switch chip. Think of it like trying to run Linux and Windows at the same time on the same device without a hypervisor. And you know that really gets messy. And you know, in particular, and I've been involved in some of the low-level details of this, there are some kind of global settings on the chip where one brain wants it one way and the other brain wants it the other way, and they can't have it both ways at the same time. And so absolutely people have looked into that. In fact, if you talk to these companies, they would actually recommend that. They actually talk about deploying OpenFlow VLAN by VLAN, which is to say you have a box and you have 10 VLANs of non-OpenFlow and one VLAN of OpenFlow. There are a lot of real interesting use cases in doing that. At least from my side as a programmer, the complexity of doing both at the same time is higher. And that's why I've actually pushed for, we're actually getting some interest in this, you know, some pure OpenFlow deployments. But it depends on your network. Your mileage may vary.
Yeah, thank you.
Craig, do you want to mention, Craig Salisbury talks about OpenFlow on the edge and OpenFlow normal?
Yes, yeah. And there's actually a special OpenFlow action, so if you remember the match action table that we talk about, called OpenFlow normal, which is don't do anything OpenFlow specific, punt it back to the other brain.
Hi, Rob. Thanks for talking here about the networking stuff and SDN. I know you're a big believer in centralization of the control plane. Do you know how long it'll take to play out? I also look at Cumulus Linux, and they're, I believe, not an SDN player. Their strategy is just deploy Linux on network switches, manage it through like the DevOps tools, and you still get that centralized control, although the logic's happening on every discrete switch. Do you have any feeling how long it'll take to play out for one of those two strategies to rise up?
You know, so much like I claim any great architectural debate, CISC versus RISC, you know, my claim is that the answer will really be somewhere in between. A purely centralized world really, really doesn't work. You need to push some of the logic onto the switch, and the question is how much. And so, at least for me right now, the sweet spot is offloading some of the per packet operations, you know, which is to say some of the neighbor discovery, some of the LACP broadcast. There's some things where the switch has to send a packet, you know, every second. And so getting the controller to do that is just a pain. At the same time, if you've ever suffered through BGP routing convergence, the fully distributed system also seems to have problems. And so I think really somewhere in the middle, and whether it's more to the left or more towards the right, that's where I don't really have a good feel for right now. I mean, I have an opinion, but we'll see. And as for how long, that's really the question. I mean, we debated CISC versus RISC for how long? 10, 15 years?
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you very much.